The Katra Podcast Conversations for the Curious Essential Knowledge, Simplified, your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of Ekatra AI. Welcome back to the deep dive. So today we're getting into a philosophy, stoicism, that, well, everyone thinks they get right.
Yeah, it's definitely survived, hasn't it? But you're right. It often gets flattened out. People hear stoic and think, you know, stiff upper lip, no emotions.
Exactly. Just sort of toughing it out.
Or maybe they know a couple of quotes about patience, but that's about it. It gets reduced.
And that reduction just misses the richness, the whole point, really, which is why we wanted to dig into Brad Inwood's book, Stoicism, A Philosophical System for Life.
Mm-hmm. Inwood really pushes back against that modern kind of self-help light version.
He argues it's hollow because it ignores the foundation, right?
Totally. His whole project is showing Stoicism isn't just a collection of ethical tips. It's a complete coherent system. Logic, physics, ethics, all working together.
For what goal, ultimately?
For achieving eudaimonia, which isn't just happiness in the modern sense, but genuine human flourishing, living well. Rationally.
So our mission here is to unpack that system,
yeah,
to see how those three parts fit and why that integrated view is still so relevant for dealing with, well, modern life, uncertainty, adversity, all of it.
Absolutely. It's about understanding the original structure.
And for that, you need someone who really knows the ancient sources. Which brings us to Brad Inwood himself. Tell us a bit about him.
Well, Professor Inwood is really a top scholar in ancient philosophy, especially the Hellenistic period where Stoicism emerged. He's taught classics and philosophy at major universities like Yale and Toronto for decades.
So he's deeply immersed in this world.
Deeply. And his work, like his earlier book, Ethics and Human Action in Early Stoicism, it's all built on really careful, rigorous reading of the original Greek and Latin texts.
That's what makes his take so valuable, I think. He's not trying to repackage Stoicism for like the latest wellness trend.
Not at all. He's using his language skills, his deep understanding, to show us Stoicism as the Stoics themselves understood it.
As it was originally conceived.
Exactly. He's like a philosophical historian trying to bridge that gap between these ancient, sometimes difficult ideas and us today, but without watering them down.
And he insists you can't just cherry pick the bits you like, the ethical advice on being calm, without understanding the worldview underneath it all.
Precisely. That worldview provides the why.
Okay, so that leads us right into the book's main argument. You can't grasp Stoic ethics in isolation. It only makes sense as part of this unified tripartite system.
Right, and the Stoics themselves had this great analogy for it. They pictured philosophy as like a fertile field or garden.
Right.
So logic is the protective fence around the field. It secures your reasoning, keeps out errors and thinking.
I've got it, the fence.
Then physics, their understanding of the universe and nature, that's the rich soil. It's the foundation, what everything grows out of.
The soil provides the context.
Exactly. And finally, ethics, how to live well. That's the fruit that grows in the field, nourished by the soil and protected by the fence.
That's a powerful image. The fruit depends entirely on the soil and the fence.
You need all three working together. And the linchpin for the whole thing, the core operational principle, is that famous Stoic distinction.
What's in our control versus what's not.
That's the one. Our judgments, our responses, our will, that's our domain. External events, other people's actions, our bodies, the past, fundamentally outside our control.
And understanding why that distinction holds, that requires their physics and their logic.
You got it. It's all interconnected.
All right, let's walk through the parts then. Starting with the fence, logic and epistemology. Sounds a bit academic maybe, but Inwood says it's critical.
It really is. Think of it as mental clarity training. The Stoics were actually pioneers in logic, especially propositional logic. But for living well, the key bit is their theory of knowledge.
How we know it's true.
Exactly. They talked about something called the cataleptic phantasia, fancy term. But the idea is simple enough. It's a cognitive impression. An impression from the world that is so clear, so distinct, it basically guarantees its own truth. It forces your assent.
Okay, so a really clear perception. How does that connect to suffering, though?
Well, the Stoics argued that most of our misery comes not from events themselves, but from giving our assent, our agreement, to impressions that are false.
Making bad judgments.
Precisely. Especially false judgments about what's good and what's evil. Believing that, say, losing your job is inherently evil, or that getting praise is inherently good. Logic is the toolkit for testing those impressions before you agree to them.
So the fence protects you from letting in those false judgments that cause emotional turmoil.
That's the idea. It builds the foundation for sound ethical responses.
Okay, that makes sense. But to know what we're judging against, what the world is really like according to the Stoics, we need the soil, physics and cosmology. And this is where things get pretty wild, right?
Yeah, this is maybe the hardest part for modern minds to wrap around, but it's essential context for the ethics. The Stoics saw the universe not as random or chaotic, but as a single, living, rational organism.
An organism. Seriously.
Seriously. Providentially guided, ordered, rational. They called the governing principle the logos, reason, God, nature, fate. These terms were often used somewhat interchangeably. It permeates everything.
And crucially, as Inwood points out, it's all physical.
Yes. They were materialists. Everything that exists, even the soul, even the logos itself, is made of matter. A kind of active, intelligent, fiery breath or pneuma shapes and directs all things.
Which leads directly to determinism.
Complete determinism. Since the universe is this perfectly rational system governed by the logos, everything unfolds according to an unbreakable chain of cause and effect. Fate.
Okay, hold on. If everything is predetermined by this cosmic chain of cause and effect, where's free will? Yeah. Where's moral responsibility? Doesn't that just make us puppets? Why bother trying to be virtuous if it's all fated anyway?
Ugh. The million-dollar question, and Inwood tackles this directly. For the Stoics, this determinism wasn't grounds for despair or apathy. It was actually a source of comfort.
Comfort.
Because the causal chain, the logos, is perfectly rational and fundamentally good. It's divine. Our freedom isn't in altering external events that's impossible. It's part of the chain. Our freedom lies entirely in our internal response.
In whether we assent to fate willingly.
Exactly. Whether we align our individual reason, our personal logos, with the universal logos, we are free when our will matches the rational unfolding of the cosmos. Resisting fate is irrational and futile, the source of suffering.
So living according to nature, the famous Stoic maxim, doesn't mean like going off grid.
No, not at all. It means living according to our nature, which is reason, and aligning that with the nature of the whole, which is also reason, the logos. It's about rational consistency.
Wow. Okay, the physics provides the why for accepting what happens, which naturally leads us to the fruit, ethics, virtue, and the passions. How does this develop? Inwood mentions oikiosis.
Right, oikiosis. It's a key developmental concept. It basically means appropriation or familiarization. It describes how our circle of concern naturally expands.
From what to what?
We start with self-preservation, a natural instinct. But as our reason develops, we start to recognize that our true self isn't just our body or immediate needs. It's our capacity for reason.
Our rational faculty.
Precisely. And from there, our concern expands outwards to family, friends, community, and ultimately, the Stoics argued, to all of humanity because we all share in that rational nature.
And the end point of that development is realizing.
Realizing that virtue, the perfection of reason, is the soul, true good. Nothing else fundamentally matters for our flourishing.
That's the really radical claim, isn't it? Hmm. Health, wealth, reputation, pain, pleasure, even life and death. Mm. They are all indifferent. Adaphora.
Morally indifferent, yes. Because they can't touch the quality of your soul, your reason, which is the only thing that's truly good or bad.
But wait, that sounds cold. Like you shouldn't care if you're healthy or sick.
Not quite. They made a further distinction. Within those indifference, some are preferred, like health, having basic resources, good reputation, and others are dispreferred, like sickness, poverty, pain.
Ah, okay. So you do aim for health.
Yes. You act rationally to select preferred indifference and avoid dispreferred ones. You pursue them virtuously. But, and this is crucial, your happiness, your eudaimonia, doesn't depend on getting them. The outcome is ultimately indifferent. Your good lies in the virtuous attempt.
Okay, that clarifies things. And what about emotions, the passions, path, anger, fear, intense desire? Inwood stresses they aren't just feelings to manage.
No, they are cognitive errors. They are false judgments of reason.
False judgments? How so?
Take fear. Fear, for a Stoic, isn't just an unpleasant feeling. It's the specific incorrect judgment that some future indifferent thing, like pain or loss, is truly evil. Anger is the false judgment that you've been harmed and that retaliation is appropriate.
So passions stem from bad thinking.
Exactly. And because they're judgments, they can be corrected. The goal, apatheia, isn't being an emotionless robot. It's achieving a state free from these irrational passions by correcting the underlying false beliefs through logic and understanding their physics.
Eradicating the error, not just suppressing the feeling.
Precisely.
Okay, pulling it all together. Logic, physics, ethics. Based on Inwood's analysis, What are the absolute key takeaways, the big messages? The first has to be the dichotomy of control.
Absolutely fundamental. And it's not just a psychological trick. It's grounded in their physics, their understanding of fate and the logos. It's about recognizing metaphysical reality.
And it's liberating, right?
Hugely liberating. Stop wasting energy fighting what you can't change, other people, the past, traffic jams, and focus all your effort on the only thing you truly command. Your judgments, your values, your responses. That's where your power lies.
Which connects to the second big theme. Rationality is the core of human dignity.
Yes. It's not just being reasonable is nice. For the Stoics, our reason is literally a spark, a fragment of the divine logos that governs the cosmos.
Wow. So perfecting our reason isn't just self-improvement.
It's our highest calling, our cosmic purpose. It gives ethics this incredibly solid, objective foundation. We're striving to align with the rational order of the universe itself.
And that shared rationality, that spark of the divine in everyone, leads to the third point. Cosmopolitanism.
That's right. If we all share in the logos, then fundamentally we're all citizens of one world city, the cosmopolis. National or ethnic divisions are superficial.
So personal ethics automatically extends outwards.
Directly. It provides a powerful philosophical basis for social duty, justice, treating others fairly, universal brotherhood.
Yeah.
Your personal virtue requires you to act appropriately towards fellow citizens of the cosmos.
It really is a remarkably complete and demanding worldview.
No question.
To make it more concrete, let's look at some practical insights, often drawn from the later Roman Stoics who really lived this stuff. Maybe three key ideas.
Okay. First, back to agency. Maybe something like Marcus Aurelius put it. You have power over your mind, not outside events. Realize this, and you will find strength.
Pure dichotomy of control. Simple, but profound.
Exactly. Second, reinforcing the passion theory, Epictetus's famous line, it's not what happens to you, but how you react to it that matters.
Locating freedom entirely in the response.
Entirely. And third, maybe something on dealing with conflict. The best revenge is not to be like your enemy.
Ah, that transforms anger, doesn't it? Instead of lashing out, which is a passion based on a false judgment.
You turn it inward. You focus on maintaining your own virtue, your own rational character, refusing to sink to their level. It becomes an opportunity for moral growth.
Okay, let's bring this demanding philosophy, as analyzed by Inwood, into our lives today. What are some real-world applications? The most obvious link seems to be modern therapy.
Definitely. Cognitive behavioral therapy, CBT, owes a huge debt to Stoicism, the core technique of identifying and challenging negative or irrational thoughts that's pure Stoic logic applied to passions.
So say you get harsh criticism at work. The immediate reaction might be feeling crushed, defensive.
Right, judging the criticism as terrible, a true evil. The Stoic approach, using Inwood's framework, would be to first apply logic. Is this criticism truly evil, or is it just unwelcome information, an external indifferent?
It's dispreferred, but not evil.
Exactly. Then apply the dichotomy of control. You can't control the criticism, but you can control your judgment of it and your response. You assess it rationally. Is there truth in it? How can I respond virtuously, perhaps with diligence to improve, or calmly clarifying misunderstandings?
That changes everything. It takes the emotional sting out. How about in professional life or leadership?
Huge implications for integrity. If virtue is the only good, your focus shifts from external outcomes like getting the promotion, status, praise, which are ultimately indifferent,
to the quality of your effort, your diligence, your fairness, your professionalism. Things within your control.
Precisely. It drastically reduces anxiety about results you can't guarantee and helps you maintain integrity, even when facing pressure or setbacks. Your self-worth isn't tied to those external markers.
What about something like money, financial security?
Same principle applies. Wealth is a preferred indifferent, not a true good. So you approach finances prudently, you save, you plan, that's rational selection. But you don't let your emotional well-being, your eudaimonia, depend on market swings or having more than others.
You aim for sufficiency, perhaps, rather than endless maximization, because your real goal is virtue, not wealth itself.
You got it. It fosters a kind of inner resilience against financial ups and downs.
This has been incredibly insightful, really going beyond the usual surface level stuff. Thinking about Inwood's deep dive, what surprised you the most, or what's a key takeaway for you personally?
For me, it's really the power that comes from that central paradox. The interplay of freedom and responsibility within determinism. It sounds contradictory, but accepting that the universe unfolds rationally, fate, while simultaneously taking absolute responsibility for your own character, your judgments, That's where true freedom lies.
It's an act of acceptance, not passive resignation.
Exactly. It's empowering because it's grounded in how things are, according to their physics.
What struck me most reading Inwood is just how demanding this philosophy is. It's not a quick fix. It's a lifelong discipline. He talks about guesses the need for regular spiritual exercises.
Yeah, things like the evening review, examining your judgments and actions from the day, or the premeditatio malorum.
Premeditating on potential future evils, losing your job, getting sick, to mentally rehearse a virtuous response and strip them of their shock value before they happen.
It's designed for deep transformation, not just intellectual agreement. You have to practice it constantly.
Which leads to a really provocative final thought, building on Inwood's point about the difficulty and rarity of achieving true Stoic wisdom. If this is such a demanding internal discipline and external success, health, wealth, reputation is explicitly not the measure. How do we actually gauge our own genuine moral progress day to day?
That's a tough one. If virtue is purely internal, how do you know if you're actually getting more virtuous or just fooling yourself, especially when the world rewards externals?
It forces the assessment entirely back onto your own internal state, your judgments, your intentions. A profound and maybe slightly unsettling challenge.
Indeed. Something to really reflect on.
See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Acantra Foundation.